This is The Dugout. Every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey. Inside access to the clubhouse from Shannon Dreher on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
Let's talk Mariners with Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. She joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Shannon, happy to have you. How's it going?
Well, you know, it's not been a fun 24 hours, but you take a look at what they have done over the last few weeks, and I think you do feel a little bit better about it, but they do absolutely have some work that they have to do with the offense.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the offense to start, because last time we had the huddle, it was coming off of a win, and we had so much fun talking about the pitching staff and having, like, multiple aces and how cool it was. And it is a very, very cool thing. I don't want to push aside the very important fact that they have, entering this series, won six series in a row. But throughout all six of those series, we still had questions about the offense. We saw it rear its head in this one. What to you has been maybe a primary contributing factor to why we've seen so much offensive inconsistency?
Well, you know, it's tough. It's tough to nail it down to one thing. I know it's easy to say that it's the strikeouts, because you saw 14 strikeouts last night, that they pretty much have been last in baseball in strikeout percentage from the start of the season to now. I mean, every now and then they'll have a week where it's a little bit better and they might be fourth, fifth, or sixth worst, but there's been no consistency with that. But then they're also, you know, not doing much when they're connecting. So it's a problem. And when you look at, and I was kind of trying to find, is there a good trend that's going on right now? What can you look to? And no, the strikeouts are still pretty poor, and you have major contributors to this offense where it's pretty poor. But then I also take a look and I'm like, well, how are they doing with the WRC plus? And you've only got three players right now over the last 2 weeks who have been over 100, which is average for the league. How are you doing with OPS, on base plus slugging? You only have two players for the last 2 weeks who are over 700. And that's just showing that you do not have, you know, that threat in your lineup right now. And I think the biggest problem is when they set out to build this lineup. This wasn't a lineup that was supposed to survive by the home run and the strikeout. This was a lineup that was supposed to put pressure on the opposing starters. And in order to do that, you've got to have base runners on quite a bit. You've got to, and then you need to cash in on those every now and then. And we have seen times this season where they have gotten the guys on, and then it's the big hit with runners in scoring position is the problem. But we have also seen long stretches where they haven't got the guys on, and last night was a prime example. I mean, how different does that look, that game look? And this isn't on Josh Rojas at all. He's been their best hitter for the last 2 weeks. But, you know, say he gets on at the start of the game and the starter just doesn't get comfortable. And that just never happened. He was comfortable the entire time he was out there. So I do think there's a problem that you have got individual struggles that are affecting the entire lineup. You need pretty much the entire lineup to kind of be on the same page and doing everything they can to get on base for it to work. And right now there are just too many struggles that are contributing to that. So they have a plan. They know what it is when they go into the game, and there are people and there are guys and there are games. You know, you only have to look back to the game against Framber Valdez a couple of days ago. Stuck to the plan. Were able to get the runs. Last night, they had the plan. They saw what they expected to see. They weren't able to get anything. And it's not because the guy on the hill was very good. They, you know, were kind of missing in situations, guessing wrong in situations, and then just not any good contact when they were able to make contact. So I know it's a very frustrating thing for the team. I know that they are and have been exploring multiple options to try and fix it, but it's no one thing and it's no one fix. It's down to everybody that's in that lineup.
Shannon, my mom used to tell me, a tiger doesn't change his stripes. I think that's what she said, at least. Sounds right. But I feel like the Mariners can change it a bit. I'm not asking them to be a prolific offensive team. That's just not the way they're built, right? You're going to rely on your pitching and win some close games. Is there a metric or maybe just something that you need to see that will show a little bit of improvement that will allow these guys to get into the playoffs? I think they can still be a playoff team. I think the pitching is that good. Correct me if I'm wrong. But is there something you look at to say maybe they just get better here, their chances increase to be that team that we expected during the preseason, that all these national analysts were saying they could be before the season started?
Well, I think it's they've got to get more guys on base, you know, and however they get them on. I think that is the biggest thing right now. I do think you have guys that are going to come through once they get on base. I mean, you can say stop striking out. And, you know, you do have guys that are going to strike out a little bit more than other guys. But when you have games where you're allowing the pitcher to get as comfortable as the guy did last night, then that's going to hurt you. I don't think it's a quick one fix. I think it is they need to do, and they need to find a way to be able to do, and they all have seen it. They all understand it. It's all been laid out to them. We saw it in spring training. Worked for a good 2 weeks against, obviously, lesser competition, lesser stress, lesser anything at that time. But I think they have to stay with what they are supposed to be, why they are on this team, why they are in this offense, and go from there. And it's a matter of having good at-bats and being able to hand it off to the next guy. And, you know, perhaps it is a little bit less strikeout. I think that is probably the easiest thing that you could say there. But I don't think you can just look for one thing here. I think they all have to step up their game and how they execute a game plan. And then I think you have to really kind of look at the guys that you're really depending on. And this team, Julio's got to find himself right now. And they are getting to that point where they've had the 40 games, or they're getting close to the 40 game mark, where you really make the evaluation. And at that point, you know, do you need to make some changes in what you're doing? And you are already seeing some players that have done that. Talked to Luke Rayleigh yesterday. He's changed things. He came into spring training with a plan, with a swing that he had worked on, wasn't working. And so in the last couple of weeks, he has changed some things. And that's a hard thing for a ball player to do, and you hate to have to do anything major in season. You do make adjustments here or there, but sometimes you have to make bigger changes. And he made that determination with the help of the coaches, and he's starting to see some improvement on, you know, just about everything. Saw the home run. He's striking out a little bit less the last couple of weeks. He is making more contact, but they are getting to that point where you have to kind of look at things and say, you know, do I need to do a reevaluation of what I have, you know, wanted to do? Julio, you know, did the changes he make in the offseason hurt or help him right now? Maybe that's a determination that's going to have to be made. But you can look up and down the lineup, and you're going to find a lot of guys that might be in that position.
Hey, speaking of those changes, we had ESPN's David Schoenfield on the show a little earlier, and he said, look, Julio can be a very, and is a very special player, but he kind of sees the same player as he did when Julio was a rookie. And by that, he meant he still struggles with some of the same things. You have the benefit of being a little more up close to this team and watching these guys a little more closely and tracking what it is specifically that they want to change. When you look at Julio, Shannon, what things has he improved on and genuinely changed, and where might he still struggle?
Well, I'm going to go right to the struggle, because that's what we're seeing right now. And the struggle is the adjustments that you see within games and within the season. And you, right now, Julio is easy to pitch to. And you can see the approach that pitchers have against him. We're going to go inside, or we're going to bust him inside, because he's not going to be able to do too much with that pitch. And if he does hit it, it's just maybe going to flip it over into right field. If not, he might swing and miss on it. And if he gets two strikes, off and away. You know, that's something that we've talked about before. And there have been times this season where it looks like he's kind of come out of that for a short amount of time, and then he kind of goes right back to it. Luckily, we've been talking about what's been happening in the last 2 weeks. His strikeouts are actually down right now. He struck out about 28% of the time in the last 2 weeks, so that's good. But you're not seeing the good contact from him. You're not seeing him being able to really do anything meaningful with the way that they're attacking him with the strike that is on the inside, and you want to see him go from there. But the biggest thing with him, you know, the best thing with him is the talent. And the biggest thing that he needs to continue to work on and get a hold of is making those adjustments. And I think he knows it. And sometimes I think that, oh, I know he knows it. But, you know, what happens when he gets up to the plate and he's in the situation where he can do something? That sometimes gets away from him. And that's when you remember he's only 23. And not only is he 23, he's 23 with not a ton of baseball experience behind him. But you know, you can't really say this is kind of unknown, uncharted territory for him, because he had struggles last year as well. So, you know, the thing that just keeps getting him is what, you know, pitchers being able to approach him the way they are and get him out the way they have been. And just the key for him is to find a way out of that, find a way to be able to get to that pitch, anticipate that pitch, and take that away from the starter.
What do you like about Rojas?
A lot. I like it. It's so funny. We're talking about the strikeouts, and I like that he comes up to the plate to swing the bat. And I, you know, you think about when he was hitting ninth, and he put some big swings. It seemed like he was always swinging for the fences, and now he's at the top of the lineup, and he's getting on base four times a game, it feels like. He comes up to the plate with a plan, ready to hit, and he's seen enough. He's been around for a little while that you do see him make the adjustments that he makes. And I like that he, you know, he's on just a crazy, you know, run over the last few weeks, sitting well over 400. He realizes that's not going to last forever. And he acknowledges that, you know what, I'm getting hits on a lot of soft contact. Every hitter absolutely loves that because he's getting away with something. He knows that in some situations. But he also is seeing the ball well. He loves leading off. He said he likes the first at bat because the pitcher quite often is not ready and you've got the chance to attack in that situation. So, you know, he's been nice. And then what I really like, I wrote about this on Seattle Sports the other day, but Rojas and Arias has actually been doing some nice things at the plate as well. There was a lot of talk about with Rojas doing what he was doing well, shouldn't he play every day? And some of what he is doing is because he is set up for success in the platoon facing the righties. So you kind of go, ah, I don't know. And my next answer was, why would you mess with the best thing that you've got going for you offensively right now? And lo and behold, Scott Servais found a way to get Arias into the game, who seemed to be coming along, and Josh Rojas was all for it. When we talked to Josh Rojas about going out to left field, he said, you know, I would had actually been thinking about it. I didn't say anything, but yeah, I was thinking it would be great if we could both be in the game. And, you know, we're both swinging it pretty well, so I've got no problem going out there. I'm glad they came to me and asked to do that. I'm excited to see how that works. So I thought that was a neat thing rather than, oh, I'm the third baseman now, you know, that kind of thing, to have a teammate that he acknowledged was doing some things. And the things that he was doing was Arias was doing nothing but face really tough lefty, Sale, Freed, Hader the other night, pinch hitting, and still was having good at bats. And Rojas acknowledged that and said that, you know, the kid's doing a really good job and I'd like to see him do, you know, do more. So I love that he was able to kind of give himself up a little bit, go out to left field, and also have an eye out for a teammate as well.
She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreher, kind enough to join us for The Dugout. Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon.
You got it, guys.
The Dugout.
You
dugout.
Did it.
I know. Well, I said the huddle to start.
It's all right.
Dugout. Dugout. Curtis won't believe me that they're similar words.
They only share the letter U.
No, they don't. Do you get what
I'm
saying?
I get what you're doing because it's like the concept of the dugout and the huddle.
Do not excuse this behavior.
No, I really do. Okay, I'm not going to do it one more time today. Coming up on The Dugout, taking a look around MLB, USA Today's Bob Nightingale dropped a wild nugget about last year's trade deadline that involves the Mariners. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Dugout every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
Taking a look around MLB, we're going to start with USA Today's Bob Nightingale, who dropped a wild nugget about last year's trade deadline that involves the Mariners. Bob wrote, "It's time to stop the speculation that the Houston Astros would trade Cy Young winner Justin Verlander at the deadline if they're out of the race. He has a complete no-trade clause and loves playing in Houston. He already utilized his no-trade clause to steer the Mets into trading him last summer to Houston instead of elsewhere." This is where the Mariners come in. Bob says, "The Mets were deep in trade discussions last summer involving Verlander with the Dodgers, Rays, and Mariners. But Verlander informed the Mets he wouldn't approve a trade unless it was Houston."
Why wouldn't he want to come to a pitcher-friendly ballpark?
Where
you can just dominate.
Houston.
That'd be crazy. Imagine, that's like the worst place you can go. Anywhere in the division, that would have been all bad for him. In this division, obviously he was with the Mets at that time. But yeah, they still would have felt some kind of way about that.
Well, I also wonder, why am I blanking? Why would the Mariners have been looking for starting pitching? Just like adding more depth, making that group more elite? Am I blanking on a key injury last year?
Well, Hancock went down at one point, and then they were kind of worried about...
Ray was down to start the year.
And they were worried about if Miller and Wu could make it to the end of the season.
Right. Okay.
So adding Verlander would have theoretically shored up the back end of your rotation.
It is interesting because this has been a team that, while they have had trade acquisitions during the season that have been very excellent and super fun, Luis Castillo, they have also been criticized in years past. Think of how differently we've been talking about the trade deadline if they were to acquire Justin Verlander. Because last year it was all about Paul Sewald's gone.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Look at the Diamondbacks getting really aggressive. I mean, Seattle would have brought in a starter.
Let's do something different this year, huh? How about we like
that'd be fun.
Do something? Let's get crazy. Let's get crazy during the deadline and bolster this team a little bit.
Bump kicks in the front office and walks in. Jerry
hear me
and Justin
out, Jerry.
Sitting there. Let's get weird.
They're rid of this. Rid of this. Hear me
security.
Out.
Security.
Hear me out. Let's spin a little bit.
A's closer.
You guys ever thought about trading for Ohtani?
Yeah. Ohtani, yeah. Name ring a bell? Well, I heard of him.
They're like Sir Beasley. A's closer Mason Miller gave a hilarious answer on Foul Territory when asked about coming up with a closer entrance for himself.
All these places, you've seen the Giants one with Doval where he comes out to the whole thing. Like, have you thought up one yet? Because you know, Oakland will get behind you, the people that show up.
We're trying a couple things out. We talked about the lights. I don't think that's going to happen. They said the lights might not come back on.
I don't know if he's kidding.
I don't think he is either.
It's real.
They are cheap.
I think it's very much like the car battery dies. You got to keep it on for a while after you get it recharged. After hey, you know what I mean? You get a jump.
I call it the Cal Berkeley spring game maybe 3 weeks ago. And let me tell you, we are flying to Oakland. I'm driving to the hotel room and I pass what used to be Oracle where the Warriors used to play and then A Stadium. It's not looking good, guys. Yeah. And that's just from the outside. I'm driving by like, dang, that's where they played? Goodness gracious.
A possum waves from one of the windows. Hi, Bob.
Oh, that thing looked like it's been there for 100 years. Goodness gracious.
Former Mariner and current Tampa Bay Ray Jose Caballero pulled off a rare feat last night. He stole not two, not three, but four bases without recording a hit, becoming only the 14th player in MLB history to accomplish the rarity. I can't believe there are 13 players before him that have accomplished this.
That's
what I'm stumped on.
That's impressive.
Yeah, you go, Jose.
Oh, I see you, dog.
Keeping it moving.
I like that he still is that instigator guy, because yeah. I think he sparked a bench-clearing brawl earlier this season.
Like that he's still keeping it up.
Yeah.
Never lose yourself. Orioles announcer Kevin Brown dropped a funny Kendrick Lamar reference during Monday's game against Cincinnati.
2-2 Rutschman gets a piece, flares it over De La Cruz, which is basically like hitting a ball over a skyscraper. And Ramon scores on the RBI single. He's got more hits this week than Kendrick Lamar.
Now, I understand there's a portion of our listening audience that has no idea what that's in reference to, but Kendrick Lamar... rapper in a rap beef with Drake, fellow rapper, and they've been shooting mixtapes and insults and diss tracks at each other's, and whether or not the information's all dark, like the actual subject of the debates are like really dark, but Kendrick is the better lyricist of the two, and he dropped some bangers.
And he don't have no ghostwriters. I train a lot of kids, a lot of Gen Zers and younger. And the week LeBron lost in the first round and Drake got dissed, I had all the little homies and go, y'all having a tough week, man. Your boy Drake is getting murdered. LeBron loses in the first round. It's got to be tough to be y'all right now. Big ups to the Orioles announcer, man. That's very current pop culture of him.
They not like us. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred said baseball was, quote, dragged into legalized sports betting. I don't know if Rob Manfred is one
twist
to shy
my
away
arm,
from.
Yeah, all fine. All these new revenues.
Another revenue, huh? We don't need that.
Yeah, he doesn't like certain things available as prop bets. So he said, we've been in on prop bets from the beginning. When we lobby in states, there's always certain type of bets we've lobbied against. First pitch of the game, we really don't want that available as a prop bet.
I want everything as a prop bet. I like it all. I don't bet, but I got homies who bet. And some of the stuff that they tell me they're betting on is ridiculous, and I'm all here for it.
I think that gambling can be a messy thing to get into. I think that sports have almost always been intertwined with it. And I don't think that Rob Manfred is one to look down at any kind of revenue stream, especially since another thing that got him into, I don't want to say hot water, it's just how things work, is that he defended owner pleas for public funding for stadiums. He said, well, it's part of quality of life for certain areas. That obviously got him into some more controversy because of what's been happening with the A's. People think that this was a huge mistake by Rob Manfred, that the league never should have let this happen, that they should have been more on the side of fans and of the team staying in Oakland. And he's like, yeah, I think public funding for stadiums is normal and great and increases quality of life.
I also wonder if, because baseball, two of the biggest scandals they've ever had are the Black Sox scandal in 1917.
And more recently.
And then Pete Rose. And then also now Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
Or not Shohei Ohtani himself, but his interpreter, Ipe. So I do kind of wonder if baseball saddling up with these wagering companies, people are kind of like, haven't you guys been the one sports league that's made the biggest stink about this? Like, it's weird to see a sports book be installed at Cincinnati's Great American Ballpark when that is the franchise most linked to this, at least recently with Pete Rose.
I know.
Like, that, it is hard to fathom. And I imagine when Pete Rose drives by that stadium all the time, he's like, what the heck, man? Like,
I
can't even be let in there.
I still contend that it is not hypocritical to embrace gambling as a sports organization and also ban your players, coaches, or whatever from partaking in gambling. Like, I don't think that makes you hypocritical, but it does mean that you have to be careful about how you talk about betting. Like, it's, you can't make it seem like it's like a horrible, immoral thing when you're partnered with it.
No, and let's be clear, it ain't going nowhere. The floodgates are open.
True.
They're profiting. Players are going to roll the dice, and they're going to risk it. It just is what it is at this point. Mm-hmm. So don't act holier than thou. Just police your players and make sure they have all the information they need to make sure they don't get caught up.
Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank joining us at 1:45. Before then, we're bringing on M's broadcaster Dave Sims. He's next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Dugout every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank joining us in 15 minutes. His pitching staff has been absolutely unreal. So fun to talk about. The offense has been fun sometimes. Like, I don't want to take away from what they've been able to do. And I feel like so much of what we've been talking about today, Bump, is like, they're coming off a game where they just struck out 14 times and they had three hits, but this is a series that, if they take the next two, is their seventh series win in a row.
Yeah, I'm with that. I like wins.
I know, me too. Let's bring on Mariners broadcaster Dave Sims on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Doing all right, gang. How are you doing?
We're good. We were just talking about, Dave, finding the balance between being really impressed with the Mariners' ability to win of late, six series in a row, and also a little concerned with how the offense has been going. How have you kind of balanced those two feelings?
Enjoying the ride. Kidding? Come
it's
on.
A this better is, way to see it.
Six straight series. I mean, everything is not always I'm a half full guy, not a half empty guy. And they've won six series. You know, Luis, didn't get any run support last night. I was looking at the standings. What are we, half game, game and a half out, whatever it is. Given how the team has hit and has not hit, to be where they are is extraordinary, and kudos to those guys. There's still plenty to work, or plenty of work to do. I mean, again, you can't say it enough. It's a marathon. Mm-hmm.
Dave, who's been the most exciting player to watch for you this year?
Probably Logan Gilbert. I mean, he's got a ridiculous assortment of pitches, and for the most part, he's commanded all of them. He was just spectacular the other day in Houston. He had like three really good ones in a row. And then he had a couple of games where he pitched well enough, three games where he pitched well enough to win. So I would say him. I mean, offensively, they're not going to be throwing any parades for anybody right now. But it's all about the pitching with this team right now at this point in the season. It's got the attention of everybody in baseball.
What are you seeing from Julio Rodriguez right now at the plate?
Off balance like crazy. Totally off balance. Missing fastballs. They're pitching him inside like crazy, and I don't know if he needs to back off the plate or sometimes maybe even go up looking for that pitch. But I mean, as a former catcher, certainly not at the major league level, but I'm sitting there as I'm calling the games, I feel like I have a pretty good idea what the sequence is going to be. So hopefully he's going to break out of it. I think, he's too good an athlete, too good a baseball player. That's not going to last forever.
The platoon at third base, honestly, Dave, has surprised me. I'm pleasantly surprised with the production you're getting out of there. You can look at Urias and say, all right, well, the bat isn't going, but he still has had his moments at the plate as well. How's the view up there looking at third base and the production that's going on?
You called it. It's good. I mean, Rojas is probably the best hitter. Unless I can qualify that. He is the best hitter on the team right now. And Arias has had his moments. And I thought some of the smashes that he fielded the other day at Houston were off the chart. Those were exceptional plays. And, he didn't have the big arm, but he gets it there. And, they're getting production, probably greater production than was anticipated defensively out of that spot. No question. That's a premium defensive spot. And, you got to have somebody good down there. And they got two guys working at it right now. And, Rojas, is good, they're both good baseball players. They know what they're doing, and they're stepping up to the challenge.
I was actually going to ask defensively if you've seen some improvement from this team. It felt like that was an early story that we couldn't stop talking about. And even though we've still seen some mistakes, I'm with Bump. I mean, I'm noticing here and there just kind of, random gems. Julio had one the other day in the outfield. Urias and Rojas as well. What are you seeing defensively?
Well, they weren't a bunch of rum-dums out there. I mean, you can't make it sound like these guys had no clue what they're doing. I mean, the baseball is such a streaky game, and you're going to see stuff. You're going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and sometimes all of it wrapped up in one. They happen to have shaken it off pretty well here to be where they are. I mean, come on, six consecutive wins against a good team. I mean, defending world champions, defending league champions, defending division champions, two of them. It's not perfect, but I tell you what, I'd rather be where the Mariners are than where Miami, Chicago, the White Sox. Who was it, Colorado? I'm happy to be where we are right now. No question.
Dave, the Twins, they're no chumps, man. You look at the run that they've been on. The competition hasn't been great, but these are still professional ball players. You got to go out and,
and
get her done.
If you're a bad team, Bump. You know that, Bump. If you're playing a bad team, you do what you're supposed to do. Your duty is to kick their butt, and that's what they did to the White Sox. Exactly. Yeah, you can't take that away from them. There's no quality – quality win points. A win is a win. It's that simple.
I feel you 100%. What's the most talented part about this Twins team? We saw the middle of the lineup do some damage.
They're very similar to what the Mariners are doing. They're pitching their tail off. They got a couple good dudes in the bullpen. I mean, the Duran kid is ridiculous. I thought the Griffin Jacks kid last night was very good. He's got good numbers coming in the last night's game. And then the kid who started yesterday, I mean, we were told, there's going to be a lot of breaking balls today. He came in thumping fastballs. Heck, he had 8 strikeouts in like 3 innings. I mean, come on. And that was not a good night strikeout-wise for the Mariners. I mean, they struck out 14 times last night. And they've been running number one, number two in strikeouts in the American League for almost the entire season. But and Minnesota, the division at this point, May 7, is a lot better than I would have anticipated. That's why I don't put a whole lot of stock in baseball predictions. But, you got a bunch of the teams are over 500. And you look even at in the American League West. Now, Texas put a 10 spot up in the second inning on Oakland. Last I looked, it was 11-0. But Oakland's early on is playing a lot better than anybody anticipated. But, they probably will fall back to their norm just like Pittsburgh did. Pittsburgh got up to a great start, and they were all hooray, hooray, hoo, hoo, hoo. And then now they're in last place.
Do you expect
it's a vicious game, people? It's a vicious game.
Do you expect those strikeout numbers to go down? Because they brought in some guys that strike out a bit less than guys in the past with Polanco.
I wish I could self assuredly tell you that I know that's going to happen.
Yeah,
you can only hope. Prediction wise, the guys have to make adjustments. This game is like the ultimate game of adjustments. And the other thing that continue to marvel at. I think I mentioned this to somebody yesterday. Oh, I was always talking to Scott the last couple of days about the tough loss Friday in Houston. So I said the Saturday win, was that a mental health win? He says, no, it's not the way we look at it. Hey, you look at it, you analyze it, you get over it, you play the next, because there is a next day, and it's immediate. It's not like football. And that's what separates baseball players, I think, probably more than any of the pro sports. That separate baseball players from everybody else, the everyday nature of it. And you can have a hideous low and have a tremendous high within 24 hours.
I believe
that's a big story, man. Bump, you guys, when you're playing football, you got to wait a week to have that, man.
Mm-hmm. That's the
you just sit with it.
The gift and the curse. You watch the same film over and over.
And Bump, here's this mistake you made in the third quarter.
Hey, Bump, you can relate to this. some of the most hated words in the Eagles language in their football play. Hey, coach, run that back again.
Yes, run that back. Don't actually, coach, skip it over. You know, the best part, Dave, is when you make a mistake and they skip over it. I don't know if it's on purpose or they just missed it, but they skip over. You look at your boys and go, yeah, I got away with one right there. I'm gonna watch it later, though.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the way it goes. I mean, baseball is just a totally different animal. It's so unique, you can't really compare it to anything else. And the mental part of it, especially, you got dudes throwing 100 miles an hour. Most of them know where it's going, and a few idiots that don't. It keeps you, I tell you what, it keeps you loose.
Yeah.
And I know from, my limited experience, playing D3 college ball, and I watch this stuff every night. It's just like, I have, my respect for these cats is enormous because this game is hard.
Yeah.
And, we consider, and I did talk radio for a lot of years, and you're sitting there, hey, why don't they do this? Why don't they? Hey, you go out there and try to do what they do. Good luck.
That's why I stopped playing baseball, Dave. Too much failure. I go, man, I don't like failing this much, man.
Didn't you stop playing when you were a kid?
In high school.
Okay.
Yeah, high school.
I stayed with it all the way to in the second year of college. But, that's a separator. It really is. I mean, your failure, I know you're super-duper success if you fail 70% of the time in this game. I mean, that's just the reality. Wishing and hoping and kicking around. These guys have to put in the work to get to where they want to be. And hopefully you got a group that's got some talent. And this clearly is a team, certainly on paper, that is better built, better balanced than the last couple, 3 years. And then the pitching is just so over, off the chart good that your expectations rise. And then hopefully you're going to get some payoff. But it's only May 7th, people. I'm going to keep saying that for a long time. And I do like one of the things that Scott always talks about. Talk to me after 40 games, you have a really good barometer of where you're at. I think today's game, like 37, 38, something like that. So we're starting to get a little more clear picture of who these cats are.
Well, the rotation's been holding it down. Everyone knows that, right? And we're hearing Wu is looking good. And we got Emerson Hancock on the mound today. When do you think a move is made, and what does that mean for Emerson?
I don't know. They love Wu. They love Hancock. We're going to find out. They certainly are not calling me on that one, but it would seem that it's imminent. And so we'll wait and see. Like I said, they like Wu a lot. He's got his gifts. He's a gifted pitcher, and so is Hancock. They like Wu a little bit more. But we're going to find out real soon.
Good situation to be in, at least. He is Mariners broadcaster Dave Sims, kind enough to join us on the dugout. Dave, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave.
Anytime, gang. Be well. Take care.
See ya. You are listening to The Dugout. We're bringing on Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank coming up next. Maybe we'll ask him that question, Bump. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Dugout, every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacy on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
This Mariners Spotlight presented by Muckleshoot Casino and by Pacific Lamp and Supply, and it's also featuring Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank. Trent, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. So I am first and foremost fascinated by your job, especially with the guys that you have to work with and what you guys have been able to do. I'm sure it's just every single day brings not only a unique challenge, but like you got guys you're sending out that would be aces on multiple staff. So my first question for you is almost like a day in the life question. Walk us through what being a pitching strategist looks like if you're working that day with like Logan.
Logan's a fun one to talk about. He's one of our most in-tune pitchers we have. So day in the life would be show up at the field, we go through bullpen management, and then Logan kind of peeks his head around the corner, and he wants to dive into info right away. He understands it. He understands ball flight. He understands strategy. He understands his body really well. So we have really good conversations in between outings, and his bullpens are extremely intentional. You know exactly what he's working on, and he does a really good job of taking into the next game, the next series. So awesome to work with. And like you said, the whole group's awesome to work with. They're doing really good things. They all feel like they have room to get better still. And there's not much room there in a good way.
Trent, I got a random question. You were born and raised in St. Louis?
Born and raised, I say St. Louis because if I tell you Columbia, Illinois, you don't know where I'm at.
Okay. All right. So yeah, perfect. Okay. So that sets it up. I don't know if you're watching the UFL. Probably not. But St. Louis has the biggest fan base in this new league. Is your family involved in that? Or are you guys kind of just baseball? And let's watch the Mariners.
I mean, St. Louis is just a sports town in general. So if I was in St. Louis, yes, I'd be all over it. But yeah, my family, they're all over the place with sports. They obviously love baseball. They're Seattle Mariners fans right now, but every other sport, hockey, soccer, football, yeah, Battle Hawks, like it's the whole bit there.
Awesome. So, okay.
Yeah, definitely a sports city and a sports family.
Throughout Battle Hawks, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying they're doing it out there. They're doing it.
They are.
I had to ask. I saw the profile. Yeah. I had to ask. But on the baseball, like you talked about Logan peeping his head around the corner and wanting to, you know, get into the strategy and get all this information. Do these guys just have this data memorized, or when they go into the dugout, are they fed information and say, okay, now you got 3, 4, and 5 coming up. This is what to expect. Or do those guys kind of have a lot of that data locked in and they're just ready to go?
Yeah. A lot of these guys know the information really well, but they really know themselves. So a lot of times they're taking their strengths in the games and then making small adjustments here and there. I do think the one thing that helps a lot with our group in general is like, there's a lot of communication. It's coming from our analysts to our conversation with catchers on a daily basis, the catchers talking with us on what they're seeing. But it's a constant conversation, but we're just making minor adjustments here and there, but making sure that we're keeping the main thing, and making sure these guys are really attacking with their best weapons. The information's obviously really good. We have it. Kyle has it on his wrist. We have it on papers in the dugout, but there's a lot of back and forth, and yeah, it's a good system, and it's been fun to watch so far.
How often have these guys, maybe just primarily the starters, turned to each other as resources?
If you look at their arsenals right now, they all look pretty similar. A lot of them are, a lot of them have tried different things that the other one is doing. They've all developed splitters. For the most part, over the past couple of years, they've made small adjustments on their breaking balls. They attack in similar ways, but they're all a little bit different at the same time, which that's what makes it a lot of fun, and that's what gives teams a lot of trouble. So, yeah, really, like I said, it's really cool. Like, Logan has a bullpen here in a little bit, and I'm excited to see what's coming out of his hand.
Man, doing what you do, it's such a specific and skilled type of thing, right? I come from a football background, so I've been coached by guys who didn't really play but just know the game, know X's and O's, and can kind of relay information in that way. But you've played the game, so I would assume that there's a different type of connection you have with these guys because you've played the game. Have you ever seen a situation where a guy never really played, but he's on a coaching staff in the bigs and is pretty good at his job?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a ton of guys who don't have any like experience at the pro level, but we have had a lot of guys who haven't been at the major league level. And I think what's unique about those group of individuals, they come from either facilities or a unique background where baseball is diving into that right now. So you have like a lot of the facility guys coming over into the professional ranks, and they've been working with that information for a while now. So Hawkeye data, biomech information, like I think every team at this point definitely has a couple people on staff that are familiar with that information and able to digest it or filter it to a player in an appropriate way. But it's exciting. We're at the forefront, I feel like. We're doing a lot of good things. Our baseball projects group does a really good job of distilling that information and giving us things that we can work well with, but also show our players and make sure it keeps them in a good headspace. So, yeah, I wish I could pull back the curtain for everyone and see what we got. It's really cool.
Us too.
Yeah, you can bring us there anytime. We'll check it all out. Hey, Trent, maybe this is like asking you to like pick your favorite child or something. I'm sure, no one will know your answer that's on this pitching staff. I'm sure they're all in a meeting or working right now. But if you could choose just one individual pitch, so not a pitcher, not a starter, it could be from the bullpen, an individual pitch from anyone on your pitching staff where you're like, oh my God, when this guy gets this going, it's the filthiest pitch.
Huh. It's a really tough question. That's a lot of kids. A lot of choices.
Right now. Or you could go from the starters if it limits it to five.
You know what? The most interesting pitch I think we got right now, or it's sneaky, is Tyson Miller. He came over to us, and he's got kind of like this upshoot profile, so he kind of releases it from low, kind of like Seawald did, but he has a little bit of cut on it. And then we also like pair it with this sweeper that we throw at the top of the zone. And it's just, there's not a lot of people that do it at this level. So I think it's regardless of the hitter that is in the box, like it's going to be different. It's going to be something they haven't seen before. So I'd like to step into his shoes and see what that feels like to kind of just attack hitters with that unique look.
Very cool.
When I was playing college ball, there was only one player who made me get up and kind of watch and see what he was going to do, and that was Reggie Bush. I go, let me see how Reggie's going to tear us up now. Is there any pitcher that, you know, you spent some time looking just to see what he's doing because you're impressed by his whole approach and his ability?
You're talking about, like, at this level right now? Or
yeah, at this level, yep.
You know what, one of my, like, we obviously get to see our pitchers every day. I do enjoy looking at our hitting information and just seeing what other pitchers are doing across the league. There's not any one pitcher in particular, but it's like with where we're at with technology these days and what people are able to do with the baseball, it's fun. It's not fun for hitters, but it's fun for us.
I'm sure you guys are excited to get Brian Wu back. We haven't really had a chance to talk about Brian much at all this season. Obviously, we've been looking at Emerson as having been out there. So could you remind listeners of kind of what we're getting back with Wu, you know, what he's bringing to the table, what you guys are excited for him to be working on and try out?
Yeah, Wu's pretty simple. He's got two really unique fastballs, kind of a lower slot, so it plays up in the zone. It'll be anywhere from 94 to 97, depending on the day. But he does a really good job of a fastball that's going up and a sinker that's going down. It's really tough on right and left-hand hitters. He's got a sweeper that can cut across the zone, has above-average movement, and he's got a changeup that can kind of go the other way on guys. So a lot of things that the hitters have to cover, and he's a competitor out there too. So he's fun to watch. And he's going to get on hitters right away.
Oh, one last thing, Trent. Now, this has nothing to do with me leaning on your expertise in fine-tuning professional pitchers. My co-host is convinced that he can stand at third base.
I didn't say third base.
Okay.
I didn't say third
stand
base.
Stand on the track.
Warning track.
The warning. No, there's the dirt.
It's like the dirt. It's
sure.
Still the warning
okay,
track.
Okay, Trent. He's convinced that he can stand there and throw a baseball, did you say, into the upper deck?
The upper deck.
Can you... do you think you'd be able to teach him how to do that?
I think, you know what, like it's like teaching a little kid, like, hey, I want you to just pick a chair up there and throw it as hard as you can at that.
I saw Charlie. She don't know how our brain works, Trent. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's the athletic brain. I'm just going to fire that thing up there.
You'll figure it out.
Exactly.
I'll give you a good... Yeah, but, I mean, some of these decks are getting pretty high up. I mean, I'm looking at Minnesota's right now. They kind of got – it's a little deep. There's a good angle to it.
This is Trent warning you, Bum.
No, we're not talking about – we're talking about T-Mobile. I'm good there.
All right, Trent, we'll let you go. You've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Trent.
No, it's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this has been The Dugout. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.